last time we were together on a Sunday evening, we were in the book of Proverbs. We had just finished Proverbs chapter 9, and we're about to move into the heart of the Proverbs. We saw in the first 9 chapters various exhortations that Solomon had for his son and for others who might read this, warnings about adultery, encouragements to follow after wisdom, and so forth. And now we come to what we would call the true Proverbs. These are the actual little one or two line statements, just little sayings that generally ring true. Now, we want to, again, emphasize that this does not mean that there will never be a time where one of these, there might be an exception to it. There are exceptions to most rules that we have in things like English grammar. And there are statements of general truth that we make. I'll give you a couple of examples. We might say, for example, men are taller than women. Now, as a general statement, that's true. The average height of men is taller than the average height of women. But that doesn't mean that every man is taller than every woman. There are going to be some women who are much taller than the average height of women, and men who are shorter than the average height of men, and then there are going to be cases like that. And we can see that right here in our own congregation, that we have some women who are taller than some of the men. And yet, generally speaking, we understand that men are taller than women. The same thing we might say, men are stronger than women. Well, we know, at least we should know, that there are some female bodybuilders out there and weightlifters who could probably lift twice what some of us men here could. But as a general rule, it doesn't mean that there is not a single woman out there that's stronger than a single man out there. These are generally true statements. And that's what the Proverbs are. They're statements that are going to be generally true. But there will be times, of course, where there would be examples where you could find the opposite being the case, even. But those would be rare. And what Solomon is trying to point out to us is, if you follow these, the statistics would say, or the chances are greater, that this is going to be the case. It's not 100% every time, every person that this ever happens to. But it's one of those, well, 99% of the time, this is the way it is. There is always going to be some exceptions in this life, some of these things. And so we begin chapter 10. Now the Proverbs go all the way on through, well, the first section really goes through chapter 24, and then in chapter 25, there are some proverbs that Hezekiah recorded. They were proverbs of Solomon, but apparently they had been lost or had been written down somewhere, and it kept in a separate place, because these are some that Hezekiah, when he was king of Judah, had copied down. Maybe they found them in the temple when they were cleaning it up, or whatever the case may be. But so there are some more after that. And certainly we're not going to try to cover every one of them. We're not going to try to cover all of them tonight. But we are going to try to cover a couple of chapters and just hit a few in there that illustrate the points that we're trying to make. So we'll begin in chapter 10, and we'll begin with number 1, verse number 1. The Proverbs of Solomon. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the heaviness of his mother. And a lot of the Proverbs have to do with being a parent or a child, have to do with raising children, or have to do with being a good child to your parents. And this is one of those. And we certainly would agree with that, wouldn't we? A wise son is going to make his father glad. And a foolish son is going to bring some grief to his mother. He's going to cause her some heaviness, sleepless nights, and a lot of worry. Well, we would assume that would always be the case. But, you know, I'm sure you can find somewhere out there somebody who would rather have a foolish son than a wise one. You can always find somebody that's backwards. But this is the way that we generally would think. obviously, we would rather have an unlimited why. Now sometimes, a father may actually be too jealous of his wise son because his son's wiser than he is, and he's jealous of it and doesn't appreciate that. It doesn't make him glad. That may be the case on occasion. But that's not the general rule. Most of the time, parents want their children to do better than they did. They want, I never went to college. I want you to go to college. I want you to be smarter than I was. I don't want you to make the same foolish mistakes I made. I want you to be wiser than I was. That's the way it usually is, with good parents at least. Now there are some parents, sad to say, that would try to keep their children down and not want them to gain any understanding or any wisdom. But that's a sad case. Later again, we see this is the generally true rule. This is the way it generally is. And then verse 3. The Lord will not suffer the soul of the righteous to famish, but he casts away the substance of the wicked. And again, the Lord basically is saying is not going to let the righteous go hungry. Notice though, sometimes we have to be careful of exactly what it says. Notice what he says, he will not suffer the soul of the righteous. Doesn't mean that no righteous person is ever going to be physically hungry. But he promises that the soul is not going to be hungry. The righteous soul will always have plenty to eat. Jesus said, hunger and thirst, blessed are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. He's not going to allow someone who is hungering for righteousness to continue to go hungry. That's one of the things that we understand when it comes to the gospel and bringing people to Christ. Out there, yes, there are people without the gospel. But we know that God is not going to allow those who are seeking or hungry and thirsting for that righteousness to go hungry. He's going to provide a means for them to receive the gospel. He's going to provide a means for them to be filled. It may be through a tract. It may be through a Bible correspondence course. It may be a missionary. It may be a pen pal. There's no telling how God is going to bring the gospel to that person, but he's not going to allow the one who is earnestly seeking for him to go hungry. We believe in the providence of God enough to believe that. He is going to not allow their soul to famish. But he casts away the substance of the wicked. Now we know some people who are wicked, it seems like they get everything they ever wanted. But is that real substance? Those things that they get, whether it be wealth or possessions, or fame or glory or honor from men, those things are just a shadow of what you feel. They're not what it's all about. And the substance of it, true substance, they're missing. Oh, the applause of the fans may sound great for the moment. How many of those folks are so empty and so lonely later on? That's not what life is truly about. The true substance of life. Many times the wicked miss out. They don't understand what is real and what's not. Then verse 4. He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Now we've got a lot of sayings like that. But basically he's saying that if you are lazy, you're going to be poor. And if you work hard, you're going to make money. You're going to do well in your business ventures. Well, does that mean that every person who's poor is lazy? Does it mean that every person who's rich is a diligent, hard worker? No, we know better than that too. But see, again, this comes back to these are generally true. We understand that most of the time hard work is rewarded and laziness is punished. There are exceptions to that. So somebody might buy a lottery ticket and get the winning ticket and win $12 million or $20 million or $50 million and they'll be rich for a little while and they'll waste it again. Because somebody wasteful and laziness and there may be those who work hard all their lives, but just them well, or perhaps even though they work diligently, some folks choose never to make more money than what they do. They choose to stay in an area where they can service others, where they can be of use instead of going on and getting greater monetary rewards elsewhere. So there are exceptions to that, but we understand laziness doesn't bring reward, and diligence does. And again, not only that, but just the way you feel about yourself. You ever had a job to do and slack off on it, just kind of half-heartedly do it? You just don't feel too good about yourself afterwards. You feel pretty poor. But if you've done your best, even if you didn't succeed, you did the best you could do and you worked the hardest you could work, you can feel good about your job. I imagine Noah, when he got on that boat, even though he wasn't able to persuade any of those folks out there, he felt rich. Why, by the end of that flood, he had everything in the world right there on that ark. He had it all. Things change sometimes when we look at things in a different way. I can recall occasions when I was wrestling in junior high and high school. There were times where I just didn't feel like giving it my all in a match. And there were some times in those, even though I won the match, I felt like I just hadn't done a very good job. I hadn't tried very hard. I didn't feel too good about it, even though I won. There were other times, I recall one in particular, at one of the tournaments that I went to, where the fella had beat me every time we had wrestled. We'd wrestled about 6 or 7 times throughout the year. And every time, he had pinned me to the mat. Every time. And I determined before that match was over, he's not going to pin me this time. I'm not going to let it happen. I'm going to do anything I can to stop it. And I wrestled the hardest probably that I had ever wrestled. And he beat me. He beat me pretty good. But he didn't pin me. I went the whole match with him. And I was sick afterwards. Physically sick from exhaustion, from how hard I had worked to keep him from pinning me. But I felt so good. Even though physically I was sick, my spirit knew that I had given it everything I had. We feel the difference between giving something a half-hearted attempt and going all out. We know the difference, and we can feel it. And that's what makes us rich or poor in the spiritual sense, not necessarily in the physical sense. But certainly, we see it all the time. People who are lazy and squander the wealth that they have. People who perhaps their parents had worked hard to save up fortunes to then give as an inheritance to their children, and then the children squandered it because they were lazy and wouldn't work and wouldn't take care of it. Happens all the time. And on the other hand, we see people who were born with nothing, didn't have a thing to call their own. Their parents didn't give them anything to get started on, and they worked their way up and even became the heads of companies and things. But we certainly see that that can happen from time to time. Then we move on to verse number 12. When we're skipping some of these, you can feel free to read them yourself. But we're going to just kind of hit a few of them. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sin. And when we have a spirit of hatred in our heart, we find every little flaw in everyone we meet. But when we have a spirit of love in our hearts, we want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. We want to overlook those little character, characteristics in them that might be a little quirky or a little odd or a little off to our liking. We ignore those things. And we're even willing to overlook the sins that they have committed in the past. We don't hold those things against them. We're willing to forgive. We're willing to cover over those sins. And even go on as though they had never happened. But hatred always is going to stir up trouble. There's nothing sadder than to see someone who is consumed with stirring up trouble because they have a spirit of hatred in their heart. And how miserable they make themselves and everyone that hangs around them. And pretty soon, most folks are going to leave. They're not going to want to stay around for very long if you have that kind of an attitude. That can work on an individual. individual level, it works at a family level, and it works at a congregational level. It'll work at a national level, for that matter. A nation that's full of hatred, stirring up strife. People are not going to want to go and live there. They're not even going to want to go and visit. That's the way it always is. Hatred is not something that people admire or look up to. In fact, it's one of the things that people complain about the most when it comes around the political scene. Oh, the mudslinging and the mean, hateful things that the candidates say about each other, and on, that's what people say. Because it reveals what's in your heart when you constantly are talking bad about someone else. Instead of, it also shows that you don't have a plan of your own. You don't have anything good to say about yourself. You gotta run the other person down. You don't have anything to go on. I recall when we lived in Montgomery, when I was in school there, there was a church there that had the habit, and the bad habit I believe it was, they would start out their Sunday morning Bible class by the preacher who was teaching the class getting up and saying, "Has anybody heard anything bad about the church and the brotherhood?" Why would you want to start out talking about all the bad things that are happening around different churches? There's plenty of bad things happening to talk about, but why would you want to focus your energies on that? And one of my classmates worshipped there for several years, for 3 of the years we were there. In our senior year, he finally he couldn't take it anymore. He said, "Well, I thought they were a sound church. They always taught everything, you know, right, but..." He said, "I just can't stand the mean attitudes they have about everyone." And he went and left that church to find another. And a lot of people did. That church shrunk down to very few. Nobody wants to be constantly barraged with all of the hatred and meanness, talking bad about others. Nobody wants that all the time. Now, there are occasions where we must deal with the truth. And there are bad things that go on that we have to confront, we have to deal with. But nobody wants to do that all the time. Then verse 24 says, "The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous shall be granted." So he says here that those wicked folks, you know, they always have their fears. So prayer this morning that those who were robbing and thieving up in Birmingham would be caught. You know, they probably were sitting somewhere today worried that I'm going to get caught. Somebody may see me. Well, it may not come in this life. Sometimes people commit crimes all their life and get away with it. But they will suffer consequences. And if they have any fear at all, they should have a fear of hell. And that fear will come upon the wicked if they continue in their wicked ways. "And the desire of the righteous shall be granted." Well, what does the righteous desire? Might say, "Well, I wish I could get more money. I wish I could get a better house or a better car." Well, if we're truly righteous, certainly it would be nice to have those things. But if we're truly righteous, we're going to desire a home with God. We're going to desire to be able to get back to the kind of relationship with God that Adam and Eve had in the garden before the fall, where they could walk and talk with Him and be unafraid in His presence. Well, if we desire that, that's what heaven's all about. And if we have that desire, if we continue to be righteous, we will be granted that desire. Then chapter 11. Verse 1, "A false balance is abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight." Well, certainly we should hope so. Why would the Lord be pleased with somebody who was trying to be dishonest in their business dealing? And yet there are some people, I suppose, who would think that God would be pleased with the way that they've been able to trick and enable others out of their money and out of their livelihood. But I can't imagine why anyone would think that way. But Solomon makes it clear. Now, the Lord is happy when we treat others fairly, when we're just. In fact, in several of the passages the Old and New Testament that talk about what God expects of us. Justice is foremost in the list. What does the Lord require of me? Like I said, do justly, one of the three things he did. Jesus said, oh, you're tithing the mint, the anise, and the cumin, but you left out the weightier matters of the law, like we've got to understand how important it is to be fair to each other. Verse 10, when it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices, and when the wicked perish, there is shouting. And that indication there is a shouting of joy. There's joy when the wicked perish. Well, imagine how true that is. We know the situation in Iraq where there are a vast majority of the people there want to be able to live and do as they would be able to, but there are some there that are just have no purpose other than to blow things up and to kill and to destroy. That's their sole purpose, is to try to destroy and keep everybody else from being able to live their lives. Well, I guarantee you, when the wicked perish, when those people who are trying to disturb the peace, trying to blow up and destroy it, don't you think the rest of the folks rejoice? We do the same thing here. If we had somebody that we knew here in Butler that was around trying to harm other people and kill other people, if that person was caught, put in prison, or executed, the people would rejoice. Now, they might not be just overcome with laughter and that kind of thing. We feel sorry for that individual for the things that they have done and for the fate that has befallen them. But we're glad they're caught, to know that the innocent people out there are safe from such terror. Anytime there's been a serial killer, or I recall around Washington, D.C., when there was the sniper, the Beltway sniper, if you remember back to that, boy, they were terrified. But when they caught those two men that were doing that, the people rejoiced. They were happy again. They were able to drive and go freely. And they knew that there was no danger to them like there had been before. And when it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices. Unfortunately, we're getting to the point in our society where not everybody rejoices when the righteous as well. When things happen, like a partial birth abortion is banned, so that it's no longer legal, why, there are some people that aren't happy about that. Can you imagine that? There are some people who aren't happy when babies are saved from a horrible death. But there are. There are some people who want that more than anything. But when it goes well with righteous, most people are going to be pleased. They're going to rejoice. In verse 13, a talebearer reveals secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit conceals the matter. We have to know when to keep a secret, when to keep confidence. Certainly there are positions that some people are in. Lawyers, we have to talk about, lawyers have a client privilege that anything that's told to the lawyer, they don't have to reveal that. Same thing with doctors, we have a doctor-patient confidentiality. The same thing with a psychiatrist or a counselor, with a minister or whatever, you talk to somebody in confidence. You want to share these problems with them, but you don't want to share them with the rest of the world. Well, it says there are sometimes people that are going to reveal everything that they hear. But a faithful spirit, he that's of a faithful spirit, is going to keep it to themselves. There are some things that others don't need to know. Then in verse 19, it says, as righteousness tendeth the wise, so he that pursueth evil pursueth it to his own death. As we know, that living righteously is living even just a good, clean, moral life is going to give us more years of life in general than somebody who goes out and pursues evil. How many drug dealers or mafia bosses that live to be 85 or 90 or 100 years old? It just doesn't happen. They don't get a chance to live that old. They just cannot speed, someone's going to knock them off and try to take their place. The way it is in the wicked world. And so it is that he that chases after evil, one day is going to catch evil. That's exactly what he's going to get. And it's going to bring about his own death, one way or another. And what's worse is that if he doesn't turn from pursuing that evil, not only will it bring a physical death, but it will bring a spiritual death. Of course, we understand as well. Notice the wording is righteousness tended to life. It doesn't mean that if we're righteous, we're going to live longer than everybody else in the world. No, there are times when the righteous don't live that long. But we know that pursuing evil is a way to bring death. Verse 22, as a jewel of gold in a swine's mouth. Imagine that picture. Can you imagine putting a nice golden ring into a pig's mouth? What a picture that is. But Solomon says, just like that is a fair woman which is without discretion. She may be attractive, but if she doesn't have some discretion, if she doesn't know how to say no, how to carry herself, how to act, but that is just, all that attractiveness becomes repulsive. All of that physical beauty becomes ugliness. Have you ever known someone who was physically quite attractive, but because of the kind of attitudes that they had, nobody even wanted to be around them? Maybe they were just snobbish, or maybe they were just mean or cruel, or maybe they just were full of hatred and loathing. They had a sharp tongue that bit at everyone who walked them across their path. Be around them, even though physically very beautiful individual, very handsome individual, whatever the case may be. You see, a gold ring that's on a pig's nose doesn't look very attractive there, does it? And good looks physically on someone who has a corrupt spirit doesn't look very good. We want to be quite the opposite of that. I would prefer to be the ugliest man in the world with a good spirit than the most handsome man in the world with a bad spirit. And in the next three verses, 24 through 26, kind of go together even though they are separate proverbs. There is that scattereth and yet increases. And there is that withholds more than is meet, but it tends to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that waters shall be watered also himself. He that withholds corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that sells it. Let's look at those for just a moment. Notice what he says. There is that scatters and yet increases. Now we don't really think about that. Well, if you give away. Pardon me, give away everything you've got, then you're gonna be broke. Well, what about the farmer? Imagine the farmer. If the farmer has his crop of corn, if that's the illustration that's used here, he has his crop of corn, and he gets that corn, and he's so stingy with it that he won't plant but 10 of those little kernels of corn for the next year's crop. What kind of crop is he going to have the next year? He's not going to have much of a crop at all. But if he takes that corn and he keeps enough seed to plant his entire field, well, he can have a good return the next year. Now, if he's taking a risk, that sure, there could be a drought, there could be hail, there could be some sort of insect that eats it, there could be locusts that come along and destroy it. And he's taking a risk. But he's spreading that in the hopes that the seed will produce. On the other hand, if he continues on the other course and only plants a few little kernels each year, be sure to have nothing at all. And so he says, the liberal soul, that doesn't mean, as we think of liberal and conservative, he's talking about just the one who gives freely, the one who doesn't withhold. He says, he that withholds corn, the people shall curse him. You ever hear people complain, for example, about the gas companies because they're driving the prices up and they got all their oil and they're keeping it and they're not selling it at a reasonable price? You ever hear anybody complain about that? I might have heard somebody complain about that recently. Well, why do they complain about that? Is it because we don't want to have to buy it? No, we don't mind buying it. We just don't think it's right for them to hold it back and charge more than what it's worth. Because notice he doesn't say that whoever gives it away, the people are going to bless. He says the blessing will be on the one that sells it. He didn't say it's bad to sell something. Oh, those evil capitalists over there in America, they always want to sell things. Well, there's nothing wrong with selling it. In fact, people are glad when you're willing to sell it. It's when you won't sell it, when you've got it and you won't let go of it, that people get upset. That's when people get angry about it. That's when people curse you. It's when you've got it and you won't sell it. Not that you have to give it away, but just be willing to part with it for a fair price. So here again, we see this principle. I've often heard the saying, maybe you've heard it too. I guess it's actually a little song. It says, love is like a lucky penny. Hold it tight and you won't have any. You give it away and you'll have plenty. You'll end up having more. And that's the way it is with many things in life. If we hold on tightly to what we've got, we're like Scrooge and we're a miser, and won't give any away. We'll never profit. But if we're willing to give, it will be given unto us. Isn't that what Jesus said? Give, and it shall be given to you. He didn't say, hold on to what you got and try to get more. He said, you give, and it'll be given to you. And how does he say it'll be given? Just a little bit? No, he says it's going to be pressed down, shaken together, overflow. You get so much back, you can't handle it. Verse 30. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that wins souls is wise. Well, there are some who go out to win souls for their own cause, for themselves. That individual is not wise, unless, of course, they're running for political office. I guess you could get elected. But if we want to win souls, we want to win souls for Christ. That's where the true wisdom is. Amazing. Solomon, of course, didn't probably have that in mind when he wrote that passage. But when we think about that passage in terms of what we know now after the New Testament, we understand how important it is. And the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. Isn't that what we're trying to produce to people's lives? We're trying to give them eternal life. That tree of life that's growing by the river. The tree of life growing by the river of life. The garden of God. If you're here tonight, you have a need to respond to the invitation. Perhaps you've seen yourself some of these proverbs. Perhaps not as good a life. Some of the things they said. Maybe there's corrections you need to make in your life. Whatever the